This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us for the Monday edition of the Noon Business Hour as another week begins. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. With that cloudy skies right now, won't get much higher than 44 degrees. It's 40 at O'Hare and 39 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park and also sponsored by GWC Law. Let's kick things off with an update of the markets at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, we are pushing to a fresh round of records here. The Dow is up 16 points. The Nasdaq also gaining 16 or a quarter percent, and the S&P adding 3 points. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is advancing 0.2%. Crude oil prices have pushed to a two-year high. They've stretched above $57 a barrel, and that is fueling some of these gains we're seeing on Wall Street. Energy companies as a group make up the day's best performing sector on the S&P 500. The effort at Michael Kors to get more customers to pay full price is showing signs of success. A lower reliance on discounting helped boost earnings well above what analysts were expecting for the second quarter, and that has stock in Michael Kors also soaring, gaining more than 14%. Sales for Michael Kors rose in the Americas for the first time in a year and a half. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
And we are going to be talking about a lot of activity on Wall Street this week, going in for earnings, and also a huge corporate merger has been approached, is being talked about. McDonald's is bringing back a popular menu, and that's going to pick up business.
And CVS is taking steps to try to compete against Amazon in the prescription business. Also, it is Stock Picker Monday. Chuck Carlson will be along with a couple of pieces of advice for your portfolio. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The week ahead will include several key earnings reports and speeches from top members of the Federal Reserve. Also, a huge deal brewing in the tech industry. We are talking with Tom Hudson, week ahead columnist at McClatchy Tribune News Services in Miami. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Tom. Let's talk about this potential merger in the tech industry.
Ooh, it's a big one, Chris. I tell you what, this thing is a monster. And Broadcom, of course, is the one here thing to do the purchase of Qualcomm, two big semiconductor companies that are really involved, of course, in smartphones and being able to continue to jam more and more information and possibilities into these devices. Really, I think what this is going to get down to, certainly shareholders are going to have a voice, but the big voice here is going to listen to global regulators and individual countries, especially the United States and China. And it's going to turn, if it is going to be successful, it is going to turn on the ability for these companies to make the case and define the market. These are two competitors right now. And if regulators are convinced that this isn't going to concentrate pricing power with any new company, maybe they have a chance for success. But first, they got to get through to Qualcomm. Broadcom's offer has to get through to Qualcomm management and then to Qualcomm shareholders before it even gets to that regulatory stage.
How does this, looking at the food chain, how does this affect consumers?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the question I think regulators are going to ask, certainly in the United States, is if you have these two large communication chip manufacturing companies buying one another, or one buying the other, I guess, merging together, is it going to consolidate and concentrate pricing power and make those devices even more expensive than they already are? And if that's the case, I think that the regulators are going to really take a close look at it. And that's why it gets down to the companies here and their lawyers about the ability to define the marketplace. We've seen competitors in the exact same space be able to buy each other before. Think of XM Satellite Radio and Sirius Satellite Radio, both in the satellite radio business. They were able to combine many, many years ago because they defined the market by not just satellite radio, but also terrestrial radio and podcasts and online listening and all those other things. So if you can broaden the marketplace out, regulators may take a different kind of look at it.
Tom, New York's Fed boss, William Dudley, leaving 6 months early. Anything significant to him leaving early?
I don't know, Cisco. It's certainly curious, but I think the bigger question for the bond market and for investors here is you've got now a Federal Reserve Open Market Committee. This is the group that decides short-term interest rates for the Federal Reserve. Four openings at the table. Three of them are Federal Reserve Board governors. Those openings still remain at the Fed, the main Fed, but the New York regional Fed has a permanent seat at the table on that interest rate setting committee. So now you've got the opportunity of the Trump administration to name four folks to sit on this open market committee to decide interest rates and, of course, take a look at inflation, take a look at jobs, and will come with the all likelihood of a new chairman, Chairman Powell, who was nominated by the president just last week.
Let's talk about earnings, because pretty significant media companies, including Disney and Snap, are going to be reporting. In general, do we expect earnings to continue being strong? Because overall, they've been pretty good.
They've been very good, yeah. I think S&P 500 growth has been 8%, which is a lot stronger than what was anticipated just a few weeks ago. We're over the hump in earnings season. We're on the backside of it now. I think 400 of the 500 S&P 500 companies have already reported. Each of these, Snap and Disney, are two very different, of course, media companies. For Snap, it's all about user engagement and member engagement, of course. For Disney, I think lots of questions around a couple of things. One is ESPN, the future, frankly, of ESPN and its ability to try to retain cable subscribers and the money that comes from them. And then secondly, I think it's around tourism and parks, which has been a strong point for Disney in quarters past.
Tom, thanks for joining us today. Enjoy your Florida weather. We're jealous. Tom Hudson, Week Ahead columnist, McClatchy Tribune News Services in Miami. Coming up, McDonald's goes retro to spur sales.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
McDonald's is bringing back its value menu. Let's talk about what's behind the move. Phil Lempert joins us, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Phil, that's our first question. What is behind McDonald's going back to the value menu?
Well, Cisco, what we've seen in McDonald's is they've actually had a good turnaround. Now, they're bringing back a lot of the old McDonald's customers. What they've tried to do in the past is create new items, whether it be salads. They just announced today the McRib is coming back. You know, some of the healthier offerings, some of the more expensive offerings. And frankly, it hasn't worked in a decade for them. So now what they're deciding to do is go back to the dollar menu. The problem is going to be for a lot of the owner-operators, whether or not they're going to be able to make the money that they used to be able to. When you have items that are $1 or $2 or $3, you know, you've got to sell a lot more Coke, you've got to sell a lot more French fries to make up that profit.
So why would McDonald's do this then? If so many, because I remember when it was first announced, a lot of the owner-operators had a problem with it. Why go forward if the owner-operators say it's too tough to make money?
Well, Cisco, I don't know if they have a choice, to be honest with you. When they've tried the higher-end burgers, people just didn't come. So I think what Easterbrook is now doing, Steve Easterbrook, who's the CEO, is saying, hey, I've got to go back to my core audience. I've got to go back to those people who want to eat two or three Big Macs at a time. They don't really care about health. All that they want is to be able to feed their belly as cheap as possible. Whether or not they're going to be able to do that, who knows? Because the world has changed. The whole burger world with Five Guys and everybody else has really changed the dynamic here. So McDonald's has to test it. There's no question about it. In some markets, I think they'll be successful. They will attract those old customers back. But this is a strategy that's not going to get any new customers to go to McDonald's.
Where does the all-day breakfast fit into this?
Well, Chris, all-day breakfast has been successful. There's no question about it. And also, the interesting thing about eggs is they actually have a high margin, as well as we wanted to get more protein in our systems, it's an excellent source of protein. So I think all-day breakfast will continue. I think it'll expand. But the issue for McDonald's is they've really got to keep things simple for the owner-operator, again, in making all these products. They've had a tendency to get too complicated, ask them to buy new equipment and so on. You know, keep it simple. When they used to have the menu board that had 50 items on it, people didn't know what to order. So now with the new electronic boards that they've got in the restaurants, they can just put up the 5 or 6 items that are simple for them to make, that are value-oriented, and then change them throughout the day.
Who's the biggest competitor right now?
You know, I think the biggest competitor that McDonald's should be looking at, besides, you know, Burger King and In-N-Out Burger and all those others, are really what's coming next. And for me, I think that the whole Poke Bowl phenomenon, I'm seeing about 10 different franchise opportunities for Poke Bowls, and I think we're going to really see that get a lot of the attention and get people to say, hey, you know, it's a burger, but or it's a taco at Taco Bell, or it's a pizza, but I want to get something a little different that's also affordable and fun to eat.
All right, what's a Poke Bowl?
So a poke bowl is actually out of Hawaii, where it's fried rice, and it usually has tuna, fresh-cut tuna. It's almost like a tuna tartare, but less expensive and more variants. And in New York, for example, there's about 10 of them open now. Los Angeles has more opening up, and I think Chicago is right around the corner.
Oh,
sounds good.
It does sound really good. Yeah, thanks, Phil. Great insight. Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com. An update on the markets from Bloomberg next. WBBM News Time, 12:25. All the latest business news from Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Well, we've got a fresh round of records here in the making. The Dow is higher by 19 points at 23,559. The NASDAQ is up 20 points or 0.3%, and the S&P adding 4. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is gaining more than 0.1%. More than half of shoppers who abandon their online shopping carts do so because the delivery options are too expensive. That's the findings of a survey by Research Now. So Target is taking no chances. It will match Best Buy's free holiday shipping on all orders. That's expected to put some pressure on Walmart here to match. We've got crude oil futures soaring higher by almost 3% at $57.25 a barrel. That's helping to lift Wall Street as well. We've got a check of the grain markets with Pete Manhart. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Corn has been down a half to up two at the moment. December is up one penny at 349 and a quarter. Beans have been up nine to down one and a half. November's are up eight at 985. And wheat has been up one to eight, up five and a half. Wheat for December up 4 3/4 at 430 1/2. Higher across the board in the grains. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are a little higher to start the week. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Gas prices are on the rise. We'll learn what is fueling the increase.
Pharmacy giant CVS makes a preemptive move in its battle with Amazon.
A lawsuit involving the former president of the College of DuPage and school trustees heads back to court tomorrow.
It's believed domestic trouble may have led to a deadly shooting at a church in Texas.
Wall Street, the Dow Industrials up 19, the NASDAQ up about 18, and the S&P 500 up by 3.
Lots of clouds in Chicagoland throughout the rest of your day. Occasional sunshine as we head to a high of 44. Right now, 40 at O'Hare, 43 midway, 39 along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park and also sponsored by UChicago Medicine.
Drivers have been getting an unpleasant surprise at the gas pump lately. Let's talk about this with Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at Price Group and Fox Business News contributor here in Chicago. What is driving up the prices, Phil?
You know, it's been a combination of factors, but mainly it's been strong gasoline demand around the country. According to AAA, gasoline demand last month hit the highest level since 2006. It's partly because the economy is getting better. People are driving. Now, you add to that situation, we had some refinery maintenance in the Midwest, and we have an incredible run in the price of oil that has hit the highest level we've seen in 2 years, the perfect recipe for higher gas prices at the pump, and we're just knocking on the door of $3 a gallon in Chicago.
You noted at the beginning that it's also an economic indicator in a way.
It really is. I mean, listen, I know when people look at the headlines today, they'll hear about this story in Saudi Arabia with the crown prince, you know, locking people up and putting people in jail for corruption and worry about that and geopolitical risk. But it's really been a positive story. The economy seems to be hitting on all cylinders. And, of course, some of those cylinders are gasoline. And then, of course, that drives the prices up. And there was a little bit of denial, I think, by a lot of people in the industry. You know, if you remember a few months ago, everybody was saying, oh, prices are going to be lower for longer. You know, we have a glut of supply. You know, but they really underestimated how low prices can actually stimulate an economy, create demand, and all of a sudden we went from a gasoline glut to a gasoline, you know, shortage. Not a shortage, but a very tight market.
So that money, instead of going into the gas tank, going into other areas, ends up actually creating more demand for gas.
It is. And you know what we've seen here, too? I mean, when you look at the average consumers, when they're feeling confident about the economy, they have a tendency to drive more. And they, you know, maybe it's because they're driving to their jobs or maybe because they're taking more vacations over the weekend. But consumer confidence came out just a week ago. And really, consumers are feeling the most confident they have about the jobs market and the economy than they have since, you know, since the year 2000. So that says a lot about what we're seeing in this market. And I think it's that consumer confidence about the economy that's really driving this gasoline demand and then ultimately higher prices.
Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst at Price Group. Thanks for joining us. Always appreciate it.
Well, and let's take a look at the market at large now with Mike Larson, Senior Analyst at WeisRating.com. Or is that Weiss, Mike?
Weiss Ratings, yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, WeissRatings.com, apologies, in Jupiter, Florida. Mike, we're up again today on Wall Street. How long can this continue?
Well, this has really been, in my opinion, a pretty healthy market advance, and it's been driven by stronger economic data and stronger earnings. If you look at some of the news we got out at the end of last week, I mean, the payrolls number wasn't too bad for October. We've got decent ISM readings on services and manufacturing. Factory orders, a lot of economic news has been coming in at least to meet expectations, and in some cases stronger. I mean, we've had a couple of quarters now with growth around 3%, which we were kind of stuck in that 2% range for the last several quarters prior to that. So that's a nice acceleration there. And at the same time, you know, you've got about 8 out of 10 of the companies in the S&P 500 already, 80% or so, that have reported earnings. And the numbers look pretty good for the third quarter. We're talking about a growth rate of around 6%. What's interesting is that sales have been growing just under 6% as well. So it's not just a bunch of accounting shenanigans to boost the bottom line. You're seeing strong sales growth too. So as long as that's the case, you've got those sort of twin drivers of this market. I do believe we can continue to advance. And one last thing I'd add is that we're not really seeing euphoria. This has been an advance that's been pretty steady. It's covered a lot of ground, but you're not coming in, you know, and having 5 days in a row of the Dow up 300 points a day or any of that sort of manic trading behavior we saw at previous market peaks, like in the late 1990s.
Specifically, what areas of the market do you see in this advance that you predict?
Sure. Well, at Weiss Ratings, we can track things like buy-sell ratios by different industries. You can see which industries seem to be performing the strongest from a fundamental standpoint versus which are the weakest. And what's interesting is for the better part of the last year, it's been the growthier sectors that have shown the best results in our analysis. So that means things like industrials, consumer discretionary, energy, financials, the types of sectors that you'd want to see doing the best in a strong economy, in a strong market, are in fact doing the best. So that's where I think you kind of want to, you know, shade your investments to, and it's kind of a step back a little bit from sectors that are more conservative, like your staples, your food, beverage type stocks, utilities, those kinds of things.
Thoughts on earnings season? We're kind of at the tail end of it.
Again, you know, we've gotten through the lion's share of those numbers, and everything looks pretty good. We have some of the best sector earnings are coming out of information technology, energy, materials. So again, those are those growthier sectors. And again, the numbers look pretty good in the third quarter, and the forecasts ahead have been pretty strong as well. So I like what I'm seeing heading into the end of the year here.
Maybe it's too early to tell. Is this a lot of companies cutting and cutting in order to get those earnings up, or are we actually seeing some growth in consumers spending money? And I guess, are these businesses expanding?
You know, a year or two ago, I think it was more driven by cost cutting and paring things down, payrolls and investment and so on. But I think that has been changing now because, again, when you see not just strong earnings growth, but underlying sales growth is healthy, and that is, in fact, what we're seeing now, That's a good story. That tells you that, you know, you're getting a lot of dollars in the door. You're not just finding ways to squeeze more profit out of each dollar that comes in. So that's an encouraging sign. And I think that's different, again, from a year or two ago when you had a few stocks that were driving the markets, the sort of FANG names that were reporting strong growth while other companies were suffering. You're seeing pretty healthy participation here, which is a nice change in pace.
Thanks for joining us today, Mike. Mike Larson is senior analyst at WeissRatings.com in Jupiter, Florida. Up next, CVS is joining the home delivery parade.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Drugstore chain CVS is getting into the delivery business while Amazon makes a move designed to drive sales. Let's get all the details from Ken Perkins, research analyst at Retail Metrics in Swampscott, Massachusetts. Ken, give us some of the nuts and bolts of what CVS is saying it's going to do.
Yeah, CVS is being proactive here, which they absolutely have to do. If you know, earlier this year, Amazon started offering same-day delivery in a number of cities on consumer goods that are typically sold at drugstores like Walgreens and CVS. And you know, they are doing what they have to do in order to compete with the e-commerce behemoth. And same-day delivery is the absolute holy grail here. And they're going next-day delivery nationwide with a small rollout same-day to several cities, starting in New York, and then roll out to Boston, Washington, San Francisco, and a few others next year. And this is where they've got to go, and this is where all of retail has to go. One-hour delivery, I think, is where it's headed. But in the meantime, you know, same day is where you want to be.
So this is not CVS using warehouses, but actually using its stores as warehouses.
That is correct. They'll be delivering direct from stores. They're hiring, in the interim, they're going to be hiring courier services to deliver the product, particularly prescriptions, but my understanding is also they'll roll out other products as well in order to get those into consumers' hands at a much quicker rate and compete with Amazon Prime.
Does Walgreens do this too?
Not that I'm aware of. You know, if they aren't, I'm sure they're thinking about it, and it's something that has got to be on the radar screen of every retailer here. It's absolutely essential. Consumers are pressed for time. They want convenience, and you know, having it delivered to your office or to your home within a very rapid period of time is just where things are headed and what people want.
Well, as long as we're talking about retailing, let's talk about Black Friday and an early start this year for many companies.
Yeah, I mean, locally, as you know, Sears, you know, announced the other day that they got pretty much the whole store in terms of Kmart and their Sears, anywhere from 10 to 40% off from here through Black Friday, through the Black Friday weekend. And, you know, others have already announced deals as well, including Amazon, Target, Walmart, Kohl's has had a Kohl's Cash Day the first of the month. It gets started earlier and earlier as, you know, retailers are fighting more aggressively to capture those dollars. And, you know, as a result, it's becoming more Black November than Black Friday and diluting to some extent, you know, the allure of that Black Friday day.
Well, it's in recent years we've been getting away so much from a bit, at least, from the big crowds at the stores, and it's been a lot of online activity.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a noticeable drop off in foot traffic in stores, particularly that Black Friday morning, which used to be a zoo 5 years ago. You look at Adobe came out with figures last year over the 5 day period, Thanksgiving to Cyber Monday, it was about almost $13 billion in sales. And, you know, 3.4 on Cyber Monday. So it's really sort of spread out over those 4 days now. And you know, our expectation is with you know, the increase in traffic we saw last year moving the online, that we expect to accelerate and see the stores even quieter this Black Friday.
Do you see a point where there's just no such thing as Black Friday, where it's just sort of completely gone?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. If I was the retail industry, I'd seriously consider it because I don't know how much of a profit they really make. It generates a lot of buzz at low margin for so many of these stores, and the people just aren't impulse buying like they used to. They come in and buy a few things here and then buy other things at full price, and that just isn't happening because there's so much price discovery online. So I could potentially see that happening, and, you know, with the ubiquitous nature of e-commerce, it really is you can find just about anything on sale just about any time of the year nowadays if you really watch.
Ken Perkins, research analyst at Retail Metrics in Swampscott, Massachusetts. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. Still to come, our Monday stock picker.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday on the Noon Business Hour, and we're joined by Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Chuck. What's your first recommendation?
The first recommendation is First American Financial. FAF is the symbol. The company is one of the largest title insurance companies in the United States, and we continue to believe there's still legs in the residential real estate business. The company has been beating earnings estimates in the last four quarters. Their earnings estimates have been trending higher. You get a nice little dividend with the stock as well. It yields almost 2.8%. And all in all, it's a nice, solid company with good operating momentum, good cash flow, return to shareholders, and it's in an industry that we think continue can do well. The stock trades for around $55, $56, and we think there's at least another 15 to 20% over the next 12 months on the upside.
At First American Financial, FAF.
And Chuck, what's your second pick?
Second pick is kind of a name that a lot of people know, but they probably don't realize how this company is really transitioning quite well to higher growth markets, and that's Intel. Symbol INTC. Most people know it as the provider of chips for PCs, which isn't exactly a sexy business this day, but that business is probably holding up better than people think, and Intel has been transitioning nicely into higher growth markets. They recently purchased a company called Mobileye, which is a leader in kind of the self-driving cars. They've been producing chips for the data center market. The last two quarters, their results have been quite strong. The company has guided higher in each of those two quarters. Earnings estimates are rising quite nicely, and it's a stock that we think has real nice upside potential, even after the nice breakout that it's had here. So, again, trades around $46, yields around 2.3%, a solid total return potential for the stock.
And having an update today, give us what you're thinking right now with the Dow.
Yeah, the Dow theory is bullish. We continue to get a series of new highs in both the Dow Industrials and Dow Transports. The transports have been a tad weak here during earnings season, but nothing, at least from our standpoint, to be alarmed about. The last major signal was a bull market signal. You know, as much as people kind of worry about this market, the bottom line is there is some there. There are fundamentals driving this, particularly a great earnings story, and that's why we think this move can continue to move higher.
Chuck Carlson, thanks for joining us, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter. He's our Monday stock picker this week.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. As we close the noon business hour, a look at the markets powered by ComEd's energy efficiency program. Here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, the main averages finished last week at record highs, and so today's gains are creating yet another high watermark across the board. The Dow up 21, NASDAQ higher by 22, S&P adding 4. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is up 0.2%. Brent Schutte, chief investment strategist at Northwestern Mutual, sees a framework for Wall Street to keep winning.
Strengthening global growth, rising earnings against a backdrop of continued low inflation. That's a recipe for future market gains. And so I think you're seeing the fact that economic growth has picked up both here and abroad.
Crude oil futures are higher by almost 3%, $57.27 a barrel. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.